trying to bring you a story that is just unfolding.
The sooner we at least attempt to slow it down, the less damage there will be. I think we seriously jeopardize our own future.
Well, you're a walking example of the power of one, and we applaud you.
We know that 40% of the problem comes from our power plant. We know that a third of the problem comes from our transportation sources. The rest comes from heavy industry and others.
Roll up your sleeves, get your hands a little dirty, make a difference, right? Clean up your environment.
Yet it's the interactions of life form that make our planet habitable. It's what makes our atmosphere. It's what makes our soil fertile. It's what makes us able to survive on this planet.
Welcome to EcoTalk, History and the Future We Face. That is the theme of today's program. We'll start off in the Dead Sea, where Middle East politics threatens to sidetrack the rescue of one of the world's most sacred natural resources. As it sinks 3 feet per year, can Middle East countries find common ground in these common waters to build a more lasting peace? Oregon State professor and author of Hydropolitics Along the Jordan River, The Impact of Scarce Water Resources on the Arab-Israeli Conflict, Aaron Wolf will offer his thoughts on the fate of the Dead Sea and the implications for all of us, really. Then we'll tackle the conventional wisdom that only inorganic, pesticide-laden agriculture can feed the world's poor, and that organic is just for the rich. University of Michigan researcher Catherine Badgley will tell us about some new studies that suggest that organic can, in fact, feed many of us. In our second half, Bard College professor Mark Lytle will join us to take a look at the history of environmentalism in his new book, Gentle Subversive, Rachel Carson, Silent Spring, and the Rise of the Environmental Movement. Finally, the city of Boston has cut its PC energy use by an astonishing 44% with the help of power management software company Verdeem. With power management something we need in every city, Verdeem will tell all of us what they can offer your company and your organization. I want to thank our sponsor for this program, Pacific Gas and Electric Company. From renewable power to energy efficiency programs, PG&E is planning for the future of energy. I want to welcome our first guest, Dr. Aaron Wolf. He says just to call him Aaron. Welcome, Aaron. You're doing some really important work here, and it has all kinds of geopolitical and environmental implications. First of all, the Dead Sea, as we know, has been around quite a long time. Why has it been shrinking, you say, at a rate of about 3 feet per year for the past quarter century?
Well, all of the states in the region kind of came into modern being in the late 40s. And as they did, these were modern states that were developing in the desert and needed to divert the fresh water away from the Dead Sea. So Israel, Jordan, and later the Palestinians used what they could of the fresh water. There's no outlet to the Dead Sea. It was in equilibrium where the fresh water that came in equaled the evaporation out, and with no fresh water coming in, all you have is a continued rate of evaporation that drops the sea.
As I recall, wasn't something about this in Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth, sort of the shrinking of the Dead Sea and other bodies of water that heretofore, you know, have been there for, you know, centuries and centuries?
Absolutely. Any of these bodies that don't have outlets, we're using more and more of the fresh water that flow into them. And they shrank. The Aral Sea is a famous one in the former Soviet Union. Even the Great Salt Lake here has similar problems.
And what purpose does the Dead Sea serve, other than certainly being a historical point? Do people rely on it since it's so, you know, it's salty, right, the Dead Sea?
Well, it's very salty, and it's very dead. There is no ecosystem within the sea itself to speak of. A couple of bacteria and one particular kind of alga lives there. But besides that, it's hugely important for industry. There's potash works both in Israel and in Jordan. The mud around the sea is therapeutic, and so there are spas, five-star hotels on both sides of the Dead Sea, in Israel and Jordan both. And, of course, the shore is retreating, and people have to walk further and further to get to the sea. But that's not the only problem. There are very fragile desert ecosystems around the fringes of the sea, and as the water level drops, the groundwater table is dropping also, causing sinkholes and ecosystem threats.
As I recall, it lies between Jordan and Israel?
That's right, and the Palestinian territories.
So what are the governments trying to do? I understand there's some plan that's been put forth called Red Dead.
That's right. The idea is that this is the lowest point on Earth, and people have thought, for more than 100 years, have seen the potential for hydropower. If you drop water 400 meters or almost 1,300 feet, you can generate quite a lot of hydropower and at the same time help to restore the sea to equilibrium. So even Theodor Herzl had, in his futuristic novel about Alp Newland, had a scene there where he's watching hydropower being generated. In the 80s, the Israelis were looking at a Medved canal, bringing water from the Mediterranean, dropping it for hydropower, using it for artificial lakes in the Negev Desert. But since then, the politics and the feasibility has kind of shifted to where the World Bank is now sponsoring a feasibility study of a Redded Canal. This would be collaborative between Israel, Jordan, and the Palestinians to bring water from the Red Sea and drop it those 400 meters for hydropower.
Are the people who live around the Dead Sea and in the various countries you mentioned alarmed by this?
The possibility of the canal, I would think the opposite. The idea of bringing,
No. I mean the shrinking of the Dead Sea.
Oh, sure. The shrinking has been a real danger. As I say, it disrupts industry. It disrupts the spas, the sinkholes, the ecosystem degradation. But this is an area which basically ran out of water. Demand hit supply in 1968. And water is tied to the politics of the region, and if you don't have fresh water in that area, you don't have much.
And that brings me to my next question. Can a major project to preserve the Dead Sea possibly provide some common ground to build a more lasting peace? The slogan for our program is Greening the Red and Blue States One Show at a Time, that even Republicans and Democrats have a lot in common when it comes to preserving our environment. And as I say from time to time, my greenest dream is that Mideast peace could break out because, there's only so much warring you can do on a dying planet before people wake up and say, oh, my goodness, we need to unify and fight the diminishment of our resources that we rely on for life.
I think that's absolutely right. People in the region have been cooperating over water since the 50s, sometimes secretly, sometimes explicitly. But now, as you point out, it's critical. And so the World Bank, when they came to start to work on the feasibility study, did actually get quite a lot of collaboration from the Palestinians, the Jordanians, and the Israelis to at least pursue a study to see what the impacts would be. There's still some dangers. We're not quite sure what the chemical impacts would be when you mix different bodies of water or of the industry that would follow with this new source of power and water. But you're right. This is bringing people together in an amazing way. And not just government to government. The NGOs in the region, there's a wonderful group called Friends of the Earth Middle East that's been launching public awareness campaigns on both sides of the border, bringing, for example, Palestinian, Jordanian, and Israeli mayors from the region on a kayak trip down to Jordan to help remind people how critical this is and what a unifying resource it is.
Mm. So what is the status of the Red Dead Plan? Is that mired down in controversy? You know, you get 12 Jews in a room and they say you get 14 opinions. I can only imagine what the Jordanians, the Israelis, the Palestinians are saying about, you know, what best to do.
Well, there's agreement for now to at least do this feasibility study, and it's a combination feasibility and environmental impact assessment, and I think all the governments are on board at least to find out what the impacts would be. And at that point, that's when the political rubber will hit the road and we'll get a sense. But everybody recognizes how critical the resource is to everybody. There is a desire also to want to save the lower Jordan, which would mean even a less fresh water availability. So I think the people are cognizant that unless they collaborate, the alternative futures just dissipate one by one.
And I'm just curious if they're consulting with American experts at all or if they're really trying to figure this out themselves, not that they're incapable of doing that by any means.
Oh, they're wildly capable. I think the opposite. The water expertise in the Middle East is second to no one. They are tapping into expertise as it's useful. Certainly a lot of its technology is going to be new. A lot of the chemistry is cutting edge, but very, very capable water people there in the region.
Necessity being the mother of invention, of course. I just wondered if it was an opportunity to work with some American, folks on this issue. But anyway, we will be watching this. It certainly is alarming, like a lot of things that we're documenting around the planet. But it's also, I guess there's that lining that might just, bring some hope and bring some common ground.
One hopes.
One can hope. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Aaron Wolf. He is a professor of geography at Oregon State University and the author of a book, Hydropolitics Along the Jordan River, The Impact of Scarce Water Resources on the Arab-Israeli Conflict. When we come back, a new study refutes the idea that only inorganic agriculture can feed the world.
I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with everyone. We'll sing and dance to Mother Nature's songs. I don't want this feeling to go away.